One of the things I really appreciate in that reading is when, Cliff, you made that deliberate pause of the pardon me. Because what's happening is God, Yahweh, is shattering Gideon's perspective, one, of who God is, how he relates to his people, and second, Gideon himself, the way Gideon thinks about Gideon. And when we think about what's happening in this passage, man, there's just great want and need of the people of Israel because of what's happening during that time. Do you remember back in March when you went to the store and you went to find cleaning supplies? They were none to be found. Do you remember when people were sick and asking, does anybody have a stockpile of Lysol? And someone said, yep, here's some. And the community here at Southside helped people and shared with one another when they were in times of distress, which is awesome. But then not only was it just toilet paper and cleaning supplies, you just walked into the meat section and it's like, uh-oh. And did any of you, when you started going to the store at those times, when those staples, you went to the shelf and the shelf was empty, did you just start thinking, uh-oh, I need to start finding stuff because I don't know if I'm going to be able to find the stuff that I want to find. This just the essentials. And all of a sudden, this fear starts to grow up of, what is going on? Why is this happening? And as much as this virus has changed how we experience life right now, it's nothing compared to what the Israelites were enduring at the time of Gideon. Because one of the things that didn't happen to me was I didn't have someone coming and knocking on my door and saying, give me everything you've got. By the way, what you've got is where you're living, and get out. Did you hear where the people were living? I mean, they weren't living in their homes anymore. They were living anywhere they were felt safe, in the cracks of the mountains, in fortified cities, places that they wouldn't have been if it wasn't for this new thing coming into their experience that was filling them with fear, dread, sadness, grief, wondering, questioning of themselves, of this God, of the gods that I thought these gods that I were worshiping would protect me. But these turned out to be the gods of the people who are persecuting me. It's not supposed to happen that way. So all of their categories are being shifted and challenged, and they're going, what is going on? Why is this happening? And it totally shifted their social relationship with one another because they're just protecting themselves. It's shattered their economy because where are they going to find anything to eat? When these people are just invading the land, and when they plant a crop, what are the people doing? They're camping out on the fields, destroying the crop. So now, not only do I not have something now, I don't have something that I can trust in the future either. What is going to happen to me? And it really caused the people to question what they were putting their trust in. So the question they were wrestling with is, well, what are you afraid of? Well, I'm afraid of these people that are invading this land, that are changing my life, and I don't like it. I wish they would just leave so I could have the life that I once had. Why do they need to do this to me? What have I done to deserve this? But not only that, it makes them challenge what they're trusting in. And it wasn't a wholesale, disengagement from God, but the majority of the people weren't trusting in Yahweh anymore. They were trusting in other Elohim, other gods that they thought were going to provide them better than Yahweh would provide for them. So they served these other gods in hoping that they would get better crops, better things in life. And what were they serving? Something other than the life giver. And what happens when we serve something other than the life giver, the life we have starts to leak out of us. But time and time again, when Israel finds themselves not serving and worshiping Yahweh, but serving and worshiping other Elohim, other little gods that they think exist, that don't, that could provide for them what they desire, but can't because they don't exist. All of a sudden, their paradigms are shifted. Well, what about this thing I was trusting in? It's abandoning me. But we see Gideon even questioning this. God has abandoned us. God says, you left me. I gave you what you wanted. Gideon asks, well, why is all this stuff happening? Well, why is all this stuff happening? It's because God told the people when they went into the land, you need to just push out all these people that have polluted this land that I want you to live in, and I don't want their actions to pollute you. But they resisted that, and God, well, that seems harsh. And God says, I'm telling you, if you allow yourself to continue to live around things that are polluted, you too will become polluted. But in our mind, we can rationalize why we live in pollution. Because we don't want to go through the energy and effort to clean it up. And now they're questioning, well, why are we in this situation? And God says, I told you. I was going to give you this land. It was going to be a blessing to you. But you chose pollution rather than holiness and sacredness and a loving God who created this whole system. And they believed these other gods had powers that would give them what they wanted when they wanted it, because Yahweh wasn't doing that in their terms as they wanted. And they're crying out, and we see in this passage here that they're crying out when they want relief from oppression. But what they do not want is relationship with their Redeemer. And we're going to see how this plays out. They're using God to make things right in their life so it's easier for them. But they resist this God who's delivered them and keep going back into that which has entrapped them and enslaved them. And when they cry out, this is the first time where God sends them a prophet in the book of Judges. And the prophet's going to let them know exactly why they're in the situation they're in. So we try to wrap our minds around this process. This prophet comes and tells them, you're in this circumstance because you've abandoned me. You abandoned me. You think I've abandoned you because things aren't going your way anymore. But in reality, if you just would have stayed where you were, things would have been fine. You left me. So perspective is huge. So when you're in one of those situations where you feel like you're lonely and abandoned by God, maybe God's not gone anywhere, but you have. Or maybe someone else around you has left God and their circumstances is impacting you. And we see when a community starts going bad, it doesn't just affect the ones that are going bad. It affects the community as a whole, those who are striving to do well and those who are not. And one of the things we see is this grief that the people consistently find themselves in. So what's grief? Grief is the sadness of something has changed, and that can happen whether it's you know, a loss of a job or getting sick or someone moves away. There's whenever anything in your life changes that you like and you want to keep it the way it is, when that changes, there's grief. And you don't just suffer grief for that one thing that changes. You suffer grief for other losses that you've had. They're accumulative. And we can feel sad. I had a friend who said his dad had come down with cancer, and right away it took me back 25 years or more to when my dad had cancer. And I was right back in that spot again. And I grieved the loss all these many years. And it brings an emotional impact to us. It creates frustration and blaming and anger. And that's what we find Gideon, don't we? Or the people of Israel. They're frustrated with the way life is. They start blaming. But God, save us. And when the prophet comes, I wonder if they said, well, we don't want you to tell us what we should do. Just take the pain away. But in your grief, when the world has changed, you might find yourself in just this stew of frustration. And when we're frustrated, we want to find a reason, and we want to find a cause, and we want to point a finger. We want to blame and just take that that's within us and put it out on someone else. It often comes out in anger towards others. And we're going to see how God is coming to take and turn that upside down, take their anger and their frustration and their blaming and turn it into contentment and peace. And we're going to see that as God works with this scared, frustrated, weak Israelite who finds himself in a wine press that's buried in the ground with wheat, because he knows if the people who are the locusts see that there's food, they're coming. So he's in this wine press of stone and he's beating the sheaves so that the grains will loosen, gathering those grains. And I could imagine him just kind of maybe looking over the edge every once in a while to make sure that no one's coming, no one's seeing. How frustrating would that be to be living in that experience? And then all of a sudden, he sees an angel. But what toll has it already taken in his life already? Because grief impacts our physical life as well. Creates physical symptoms. Is he weak? Is he tired? Is he just run down because of all the things he's going through? Does he feel like there's no hope? Not only is things around me going bad, I feel like my body's falling apart too. Grief can impact that as well. And also the thinking. Hurting our concentration. How we decide things. All kinds of impacts that this grief, that the world isn't supposed to be this way. It should be different. And when he sees this angel of the Lord, he's not thinking clearly. But he's thinking, as probably all of us would, from our human perspective. And what does it mean that this angel of the Lord appears to him and says, welcome, mighty warrior.
Me?
No. No, you don't have that right. I'm not a mighty warrior. The Lord is with you. No, he's not. If the Lord was with me, I wouldn't be in this wine press hiding and beating out grain. I would be sitting at my table, going to the store, doing everything I always did before without any question of how I'm going to act, what I'm going to say, how I'm going to interact with people. I could just do what I want, when I want, and everything would be right in my mind. That's what it means for God to be with me. Is that what you often say in this time of challenge? If God were with me, if God was with us, then this is the way it would look. But from the angel's perspective, he's a mighty warrior. He's not just going to be a mighty warrior, he's going to be a mighty deliverer. What? Me? And he says, if God were with us, this stuff wouldn't be happening. He says, you don't understand why this stuff is happening. You're only looking at it from your personal, selfish perspective. You need to see the bigger picture. And Gideon says, and if God was with us, where are all these marvelous acts of God's power? Where are all the signs of deliverance that we learned about? Why isn't he delivering us now? Well, there's a reason why he's not delivering you. There's a reason why all these things are happening. Just look around you, Gideon. And I imagine as he lifts his head up above the edge of that wall and he's looking out and he sees fields just crushed and people just impoverished and for 7 years just wondering what's next, he looks over in his father's field and he still sees a God sitting there that the people of Israel are worshiping, thinking that that is their God. Look around you. This is why it's happening. Because the people of God have not separated them from themselves from the world to be a light to the world. They become just like the world. And that was what they wanted. So that's what I let them have. Look within you, Gideon. Well, I'm not mighty. I'm not even strong. I'm from the smallest and weakest of tribes, and you say you're going to use me? And you're going to send me to deliver these people? Have you ever sat there and wondered that God can't use you because you don't have what it takes to be used by him in any way because you're not smart enough, you don't know enough, you're not good at talking to people, you struggle with certain sin in your life, so therefore I can't be used by God? If you read the scriptures at all, you're going to find out really quickly that those are exactly the people that God chooses out of their doubt and raises them up in his strength. Because then when God uses those kinds of people, it demonstrates that he is the source of redemption and deliverance. So when God comes to you and you're feeling like you'd have nothing to offer, he says, you have so much to offer if you let me use you to offer it to the community. And you will be amazed, Gideon. You will be amazed, church, what I can do when you just let me work through you. Don't trust in your strength, because the angel says, go in your strength. And Gideon's like, I don't have any. He says, yes. You don't. But with me, you do. But Satan is always going to be there telling you to look at the reality. You look at yourself in a way that's distorted, that shows that you're just weak and you can't be used. And God is saying, no, don't trust that lie. I can use you if you make yourself available to me. He says, look to me. Don't look at yourself. Look to me. And Gideon says, well, I'm looking for a sign. I want proof that what you're saying is actually going to happen. And that's pretty human. I want a sign. And we're going to see that Gideon always will ask for a sign because he's afraid. He doesn't trust himself. That's what we do. And it's, when we don't trust ourselves, then we question God. Well, can he use me? Why would he use me? I'm nothing. But unfortunately, one of the things that Jesus says during the time where he was walking the earth, that this desire for people to find or see a sign, they just want more signs. I just want another sign. I want you to show me exactly how I'm to walk, what steps I'm to take, what turns I should go. He said, would you just trust God? Trust all of the signs he's already given you, and don't keep asking for another sign. Even though we're going to see God will give Gideon a sign, one of the things Jesus says in Matthew 16, verse 1, he says, a wicked and adulterous generation wants a continual sign. He says, but there will only be one sign that I give to that. The sign will be me. The sign will be a cross. The sign will be a tomb. The sign will look like Jonah. But as Jonah ran away from God, I'm running with God into what is considered Nineveh, the people who are just separated from God. And Jesus comes down from heaven into our experience for our sake. In Matthew 24:24, he says, you will be seeing many false prophets, many false messiahs, and they will give you many signs. So be careful. That if you're always asking God for a sign to prove himself to you, you might just be fooled by false messiahs and false prophets. And you might start running after those things, thinking that those are God when they're actually not, just like the people we find here in the time of Gideon, looking for other gods who are going to say what they want to hear and proclaim they're going to do something they will do for you, but never pays off. Or if it pays off, it only pays off short term and leaves lots of damage. In John 12, 37, even when Jesus was performing many signs, I mean, you just read through the Gospel of John, you're going to see sign, 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 sign. Many of the people were, nope, 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 nope. So even when God gives you what you want, when he's calling you to be something you're not sure you could be, or don't want to give up something else, we can say, nope, I just need more. Making an excuse. But as Gideon is talking to the angel of the Lord, he says, about this sign, I'm going to go create an offering for you. So he said, just wait here. So he runs off and he cooks up a meal and he brings it out. And the angel of the Lord sitting there with a staff in his hand, he says, just put it there on the rock, pour the broth, put the meat, the bread, the broth, just pour it over there. And so he does all this and he takes his staff. And the guy looks like just a wanderer, right? Just someone who's on a walk. He's got his staff coming along. He's not this thing where, oh, you know, the plate behind the head and the big angel wings. He's just God in his presence, the angel of God. And he takes his staff, he touches the rock and is that good enough for you? It says the angel disappears. And then God speaks to Gideon. He says, I'm the God of peace. Do not be afraid, Gideon. I will bring you peace because Yahweh is peace. And Gideon, you're going to disturb the peace. Because the peace that these people are finding and trying to assimilate to themselves has to be disturbed if they want to have peace with me. So you have to choose. What do you want to have peace with? And so he creates this altar of the God is peace, he names it. Yahweh is Shalom. In Luke chapter 12, verse 51, Jesus says, and this might be unusual to our ears because we think of Jesus, Prince of Peace. But in Luke 12, 51, he says, I did not come to bring peace. I came to disturb the peace. I've brought a sword. We think, well, that's not my Jesus. That's not my lamb carrier. But there was a time in the people of Israel's lives where he had to disturb the peace. Because if he didn't disturb the peace, they would not have peace with God. They might be content with life as it was and just kind of eke out the rest of their life till they went into the grave. But what awaited them was not going to be peace. And as Gideon creates this altar and he offers the sacrifice of his father's bull and he cuts down the Sherah poles and destroys the altar to Baal, and the people come out and they go, what happened here? Well, Gideon, he was afraid and he did it at night and got a bunch of people to help him. And the people come out, who destroyed our gods? Excuse me, how are these gods protecting you from the Midianites? How are these gods doing anything you want them to do for you? We're going to destroy him. Well, it was Gideon. Let's kill him. And Gideon's father says, wait a minute. If Baal is really upset by this, let him contend with Gideon. Let him take it out on him. Don't you be there thinking that, well, I'm going to kill Gideon for the sake of Baal because his Baal told you to do this? And if this God really exists, let him do it himself. And Gideon is then known as the one who contends with Baal because in doing so, he was going to bring the people of God peace. And Gideon was giving himself over to be an instrument of God's peace. Wow, he was going to bring challenge and disturbance to the world for their sake. In Luke 2, when Jesus is coming to earth, and the hosts of God are celebrating before the shepherds, the glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace to those whom his favor rests. That's why Jesus came, is to give rest to the people of his favor, the people who would see that God is on their side, people that would be given this gift of grace, this gift of favor. And as Jesus is leaving this life, in John 14, 27, peace I leave you, my peace I give you. I do not give as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid. Just like the angel of the Lord told Gideon, don't be afraid. You will be my instruments of peace. As you give yourself over to the peace giver. And in Jesus' death, he defeated our greatest enemy. And through his blood, he washes away that which stands between us and the Father, and it brings us peace. And we stand in the presence of God with favor. Even though we're not doing it perfectly, we are like his children who are striving to become what we've been born to be. And he pours out more and more favor. So we have to ask ourselves, what are we afraid of? And when we're afraid, what are we trusting in? And when we're trusting in that, do you realize that's what you're serving? And if what you're trusting in is not God, you're serving something other than Yahweh, the God of heaven and earth. And God wants us to have peace. But when we're focused on others and not Him, our peace easily drains out. Paul wrote to the Corinthians, "Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort." He wants to tend to your hurts. He wants to soothe your pain. His way. Will you let Him? Or must He do it your way? He comforts us in all of our troubles if we let Him. If all we're focused on are our troubles rather than the one who brings comfort, then our troubles are going to be huge in our minds, and the one who comforts will become small in our minds. And we'll go back to the fearing. But He says, "I want to comfort you in all troubles so that you know that I have overcome the world that you're so afraid of." Paul says, this comfort that we ourselves received from God. God desires to deliver humanity. If humanity would just turn to the deliverer. And He will use people like us as instruments to deliver others from their enslavement. Don't doubt that. Trust that. Embrace that. That God can use you in mighty and miraculous ways. And don't be reluctant to use your abilities to advance God's kingdom. Because God's kingdom is advanced through broken people like us, who give ourselves over to His will and His way for His sake, to His glory, to our comfort and our favor. What a great God we have. And if you're struggling with the world being bigger than what it is, start thinking more about God. Manage the challenges in life through His will, His way. And He will help you manage these challenges in ways that bring peace and contentment, knowing that He is victor over all. If you need the prayers of the church, you can come, let us pray with you and for you. But most of all, walk out of here today with a heart lifted high, knowing that God desires you deeply. Let's stand and give Him praise.